So wait, we thought the government was full of incompetent, horny lunatics then? Woof. Burn After Reading was the number one movie in America.
The number one movie in America.
Movie in America.
Movie in America.
The number one movie in America.
Hi, I'm Sean Collier. Too real?
Yes. No, I mean, it just is reality.
Right. On the nose.
Yeah. And I started listening to the This Had Oscar Buzz episode about this movie this morning when I was in the shower. I got out of the shower to turn it off because they recorded it the day that Joe Biden was declared the winner of the 2020 election. And they were like, it's so interesting to be watching this. It was, you know, came out at the end of the Bush era, and we're just coming out of the Trump era. And I was like, get me out of this room.
I mean, we should be so lucky as to have like slightly dumb alcoholic assholes who went to Princeton and have some interest in doing their jobs.
A lot of these schmucks went to Princeton.
Nevertheless, let's try to keep it there. I didn't even get through the part where I say, hi, I'm Sean Collier. I'm joined by two witches who want a drink. It's Camila Adams.
Midnight Margaritas!
And Robin Hitchcock.
You put the lime in the coconut.
You do. Practical Magic, 81 and two-thirds. Hey, that's 24th overall. Hey. We've seen some movies we like. That's still in the top 25. The current top 10 cutoff remains Speed, 87 and two-thirds. You got to be better than Speed.
Which is a podcast you should check out.
Do not let your speed drop below 80. You get it. And our current number one movie in America is Get Out, 95. Can't see that fallen.
Not for a while, at least.
Yeah.
I can't imagine what could dethrone it.
But now we have landed on the Coen brothers. We haven't really talked about them on the show. I'll explain why later.
This is their only number one movie. Is that why?
There's one more.
Okay.
This is good. I remember liking it. I know I saw it at the time. I might have even seen it more than once at the time, and I liked it at the time. And I have always been
agnostic.
A quiet Coen brothers fan. I don't care. I'm not going to get pumped. But when I see them do a new thing, I'm usually like, oh, good. That'll be a nice time.
I think I feel the same way.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Camila?
I guess I'm kind of where you are, where the Coen brothers are concerned. I don't look for their stuff, but I also don't avoid it either.
Mm-hmm.
And Burn After Reading, I did not see this. I thought I did.
Mm.
And it looks like it came out September 2008. I don't know. I was in the middle of a divorce.
That'll do it.
And not the movie for kind of overlapping subject matter.
I was going to say, this is an incredibly divorced movie.
Yeah.
And neither of them have ever been divorced. Now, Ethan Coen is married to a lesbian and they are polyamorous. And it maybe was around this time that they were sorting all that out.
Probably.
Yes. Yeah.
Could well be.
Because divorced movie.
Yeah.
So I'm interested, because you saw it at the time.
I've never seen it before.
Oh, my goodness. Then I want to know from both of you, did you expect this to go the places it went?
I didn't know what to expect.
Yeah.
Like, honestly, I have no idea. Like, I had no idea. I was pleasantly surprised.
Yeah.
But I wasn't, I didn't know what to expect going in.
I'm
going to
say yes. Well, first of all, Colin has this thing that he does where he refers to things in movies that you probably shouldn't know happen when he's describing the movie. I was like, Burn After Reading, I've never seen it. And he was like, is that the one where and I was like, I guess so. I'm going to bleep that there.
It's coming in
but,
the
so yeah,
recap.
I would say this is a movie, if you haven't seen it, you should probably watch it before you listen to this episode.
Yeah, probably. Yeah.
Unless you have no interest in, right.
The thing that Robin said under the bleep, what could it be, listeners? And some other moments in this are like, I know that's kind of a Coen brothers thing.
Yeah.
Weird, unexpected shit happens. But especially that moment.
Oh, I was taken aback.
That has lived in my head for 16 years because it's so like, well, I didn't think that was about to happen. And it's so sudden and quick. And George Clooney's stumble down the stairs is so... This is a movie that really understands going down the stairs in a silly way. I didn't realize how ridiculous taking multiple stairs at one time looks until I saw Brad Pitt and George Clooney do it.
It was also a very Janet Leigh moment in Psycho. Where this whole thing, because you weren't expecting that at all.
This is a movie. I mean, let's do some segments. Crap, whose recap is it?
Yours?
I think it's yours, buddy.
Oh, no. This movie? The ending of this movie is characters being unable to summarize what happened in this movie. Okay, tell me when to go.
Go.
There's some government people, and they're all jerks, and they're all sleeping with each other. Unless they're married, then they're not sleeping with each other. The central thing is that John Malkovich gets reassigned, then leaves his job because he is an alcoholic and probably isn't doing a very good job at whatever government thing he does. He decides to write his memoir and then loses it, and some one way or another, that and some of his financials end up on the floor at Hard Bodies Gym, where Brad Pitt and Frances McDormand and Richard Jenkins work. And Brad Pitt and Frances McDormand thinks it's intelligence that they can make money off of, which Frances McDormand needs because she wants 4 separate cosmetic surgeries. So they try to blackmail J.K. Simmons to get money. When that doesn't work, they go to the Russians. When that doesn't work, they try to find more stuff, which leads to Brad Pitt crawling back into John Malkovich's former house to try to... Anyway, at the same time, Tilda Swinton is divorcing John Malkovich and having an affair with George Clooney. When he finds Brad Pitt in that house, he shoots him, further complicating things. Is there a whole plot line I'm not really getting
George
to
Clooney
yet?
George Clooney and Fran?
Yeah, George Clooney and Frances McDormand are hooking up. That really only plays in when he makes the connection with the... A lot of people get into a lot of complications with one another for dumb reasons. The CIA and FBI get involved, and at the end they shrug and say, well, enough people are dead or fleeing the country that we don't need to worry about this.
Whew, yeah, that was well over. But
it can't be summarized.
But it makes me feel good about my last week's blunder.
Yeah.
Next week, I am going to be tight.
No, please do a poor job. It's a very good example of putting the pieces into play and then letting them unwind, yeah. Right? Because it does introduce us to all of these characters. George Clooney's wife, played by Elizabeth Liz, who writes children's books about a cat who sleeps in the Capitol Rotunda.
By the way, like, I would love to read those books. A child Robin would have been like, more, another, mm-hmm. one more time.
It sets up all these characters and gives and just backs them into stupid situations.
Yes.
I love how it's so character driven, and it took me a minute to catch the rhythm of the movie because I was losing focus for like the first 20 minutes, and then I finally got into it. Yeah.
I found myself rewinding because I felt like I missed something important several times.
Yeah.
And then being like, no, I didn't miss something important. Nope. This just is going. It's just going. It's like a wind up toy.
I think the best show, now, don't tell, is when we see Connie's hard body gym bag.
Mm.
And then
I don't know what you're talking about.
Tilda Swinton's lawyer's secretary.
Oh my God.
Who is the one who's actually responsible for losing the memoir.
Yes.
When somebody asked her to get it, she goes into her hard body's bag, gym bag, and is like, I can't find it.
But I love in that moment that it's like, well, I'll just print another one. It's not a big deal. Right. Underlining that not only there is no significance to this CD whatsoever.
It's fun for there to be a plot CD that really dates this movie.
Yeah.
This is probably the latest a movie could be with a CD-ROM as a plot point.
He says floppy at one point.
Oh, right. My goodness.
Give me the floppy or the CD or whatever.
Whatever. And then the one guy asks, is this Apple or PC? Is this Mac or PC?
Formatting.
Bird After Eating was released September 12th, 2008. It was the 29th of that year. Dark Knight and Tropic Thunder dominated the summer, but this is almost everything else was a 1 week number one, including this. This won a battle royale of new releases. There were the top 4 spots that weekend were new releases. Burn After Reading won with $19.1 million. Tyler Perry's The Family That Prays was in second with $17.3 million. Righteous Kill with Al Pacino, and it's a latter
Colin
Al Pacino.
And I had our first fight while we were watching that movie.
Oh,
Righteous
really?
Kill? Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I mean,
about whether or not Al Pacino was doing his job.
I can't even remember.
Third place, $16.2 million. And The Women, which, what's The Women? It's
The Little Women?
No.
The Women.
I looked up who's in it anyway.
This
fourth
is
place.
Another, this had Oscar buzz.
$10.1 million, just the 1 week at number one, fell to second place behind Lakeview Terrace. Samuel L. Jackson and Patrick Wilson, Our Bad Neighbors. That was the...
I saw that.
Following... It was okay.
It was,
yeah.
When Sam Jackson parks after changing lanes, this is his new conflict.
Right, exactly.
I think The Women may have been based off of an older movie with like Mommy Dearest and a bunch of
Faye
other
Dunaway?
No, the real one.
Joan Crawford.
Joan Crawford, yes.
And my brain almost said Betty Davis, and I felt Joan Crawford's ghost smacking me in the back of the head. 4 weeks in the top ten, $60.3 million, 49th place for that year. This was not an awards darling. This did not get an Oscar nomination. Hmm. It was in the National Board of Review top 10, two Golden Globe nominations just for Best Comedy and Best Actress in a Comedy for Frances McDormand, one Critics' Choice nomination for Best Comedy, didn't win any of that. So this was not one of their lauded films in that sense. And in fact, I didn't realize they barely win anything.
Coens?
Yeah.
What? Really?
They have six wins in 42 nominations, if we count Tragedy of Macbeth, which is Joel alone.
Yeah. Sounds like.
42 nominations, six wins. It's just actress and original screenplay for Fargo, and then...
Brother?
No, picture director, adapted screenplay, and supporting actor for No Country for Old Men is the big one. But none of their other movies have won an Oscar.
I mean, here's the thing. If you go to Joel Coen's house, okay, mm-hmm. not even including Frances McDormand's Oscars,
right?
There are five Oscars on his shelf.
Sure.
That's winning a lot of fucking Oscars.
That's winning a lot of Oscars. But I would not have guessed that only two of their movies have won Oscars.
Maybe four Oscars. I might have miscounted. Yeah. Regardless, you're right. Yeah.
Yeah. And the other thing they don't do is make a lot of money. They're fine. They don't care. Their top box office, True Grit is at the top, $171 million. No Country for Old Men, $74 million. This is third at 60. Oh, Brother Arthur made about 45, and The Lady Killers made about 40. Their only number one movies in America are Burn After Reading and True Grit.
Wow.
Shocking.
No Country for Old Men peaked at number five.
What?
Oh, Brother Arthur peaked at number nine.
That was a slow burn.
Yeah.
No Country for Old Men came out like kind of early in award season, I want to say. Mm-hmm. And like, I know that I was like, I have no interest in this movie. And then I was like, oh, it's inevitably going to get lots of Oscar nominations. I need to go see it.
I guess that's also when did that come out? Like
2007. This was their first movie after it.
Okay. So yeah, like that was still around our time when we were still going to Blockbuster, doing Blockbuster nights and whatnot. And so I guess that was one of the things that was like after the fact. It's like, oh yeah, let's rent this. And then everybody started.
Mm-hmm.
To get into it.
Mm-hmm. Speaking of, the scripts for Burn After Reading and No Country for Old Men were written simultaneously. And they said they would like spend a day doing No Country for Old Men, spend a day doing Burn After Reading. I cannot conceive of doing that and both of them being good.
No, not at all.
I can
get keep the vibes separate.
If one sucked, I'd be like, oh, okay, you put your effort and then you fucked around the next day. But right. The fact that they're both good in different time periods and genres, right. And
well, okay. It sounds like you both liked this movie more than I did. So
yeah, I liked it.
No, I didn't dislike it. It's like this is fine, but I was like, this is clearly to me a lesser Coen Brothers movie.
Really?
Like I wouldn't say it is bad, but I'm like, this is really mid, and so I feel. It makes more sense to me, knowing that's how they wrote it, because it makes a lot of sense for this movie to be cathartic, or not cathartic, that's not what I mean, to be like a relief, right? It's like, and maybe I'm also still thinking about this, like the end of the Bush administration framing from this at Oscar buzz, but like, just sort of like they spend a day thinking about, you know, the bleak world of No Country for Old Men, where there's like no morality or anything to cling to, and then they're like, let's do some silly jokes about how dumb people are.
What's the best Coen Brothers movie that isn't Fargo?
I would say my favorite, I guess, is Inside Llewyn Davis.
God, I love that movie.
And I'm not crazy and about that movie.
Oh, no. Raising Arizona.
Yeah. I mean, Raising Arizona is formative for me. That was like one of the movies that we would just watch whenever it was on. Yeah. So I think that's probably my favorite, but I don't know if I think it's the best.
I mean, I think it's a tie between Raising Arizona and No Country for Old Men. I mean, I'd have to rewatch True Grit. True Grit was very good. It got a little silly at times. Yeah, it should be. It's interesting that none of us even thought about Lebowski. I am of the opinion that Lebowski, I feel about that, everything you just said about Burn After Reading. Lebowski's fine, and it's good at, like, moments and memes.
Yeah.
But it's not, like, a great movie.
I don't need to revisit it, like, really ever. You know, I would never purposefully put it on.
I am exactly the right age for The Big Lebowski. I saw it at exactly the right age. I like it very much. But what you're saying is not untrue.
Yeah, I mean, I don't not like it.
Yes.
And I'm very familiar with it, but it's just like, it's fine.
It has great phrases. Careful, man, there's a beverage here is a great phrase. But like in terms
really
of like, is this
the room together?
Hate the fucking Eagles, man. That's just a true statement that Eagles are not good. Yeah. Anyway, we can keep down this path, and I'm almost done because there's not that much to say about this movie. It was indirectly inspired by Brad Pitt getting a bad hair dye job for a commercial. That apparently was the seed that led to that character.
It was given very cool world vibes.
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. By the way, eagle-eyed viewers, if you had looked at the other movies on the when they go to see the Dermot Mulroney movie. And there
coming
are,
up Daisy?
Coming up Daisy. And there are other movies listed on the ticket window or something. One of the titles is Hail Caesar, a name they would not use for a further 8 years.
Oh, wow.
See, I would say this movie to me is in the Hail Caesar tier.
Where I'm like, a lot better than Hail Caesar.
Where I'm like, there's stuff to enjoy here, but to borrow a Camila phrase, it doesn't curl over.
I think it curls over. I did like, well, the last thing I wanted to do, and then we'll chat more openly. For lack of anything else to do in the Faxy segment, Robin, name the Oscar winners and nominees.
Okay, so Frances McDormand, mm-hmm. George Clooney, mm-hmm. Tilda Swinton, mm-hmm. Brad Pitt, mm-hmm. J.K. Simmons. Mm-hmm. Additional nominees include Richard Jenkins, mm-hmm. And there's one more I want to say.
Malkovich.
Yeah.
Yep. Thank you.
Well, 6 out of 7 and then an assist. That's great. Yes. Yeah. 5 Oscar winners and 2 nominees. Which, if nothing else, how great to have that much talent in a 96-minute comedy. Yeah.
And they're all good.
They're all good.
Except for, hang on. They're all good. I would say the weakest of all of them is George Clooney.
Oh,
and I think George Clooney is a phenomenal actor. Like, he would have been my winner in mm-hmm. 2011 and possibly my winner in 2000s. Oh, no, that was There Will Be Blood. But if not, but for Daniel Day-Lewis winner in 2007. So I think he's a phenomenal actor. I do not think he's very good at character work. And when he is playing this guy, when he's at his, like, whenever he's up, whenever he's, like, being a little bit more paranoid and manic, and he's doing that eye-darting thing, I'm like, this seems fake and cheesy. And maybe that's the movie you're in, but I wanted better.
I loved him in this. I specifically noted that I love when he is making himself look silly. I thought the elevated stuff was a good reflection of a guy who has constantly been around danger and intrigue, but has never had a moment of it, and so does not know how to control himself.
That's really well put.
My weak link is Brad Pitt. I think I loved his little dancing. Other than that, I thought he was doing an impression of people doing impressions of Keanu Reeves.
Wow.
I just saw him as the guy that works at a gym because I have worked at a gym and that guy exists. and I think this is probably the funniest that I've seen Brad Pitt in anything. The scene with him and Malkovich in the car.
I was dying.
Oh my God. I was hurting. I was laughing so hard. Mm-hmm. Like Brad's reactions and just his facial expressions throughout it as he's reacting to everything Malkovich is saying. And then he's like, oh, you think it's a Schwinn? Fucking top tier.
He did have my biggest laugh, which was when he grabs like a trowel, like he's going to jimmy the lock and then just dead faced jams it through the window like he's swatting a cobweb aside. He has some very funny moments. I just thought it was the least believable.
Yeah.
You know?
And then back to Clooney. Like, I feel like when he presents the chair to old girl, the way he plays that, so proud. Nothing, there's no malice, like there's nothing sinister about this at all. This is very matter of fact. I'm a hobbyist. I know how to make shit myself.
This is a sex chair for people who are listening who maybe don't recall the movie.
He makes a
It's like a rocking chair with a dildo in it.
And he smashes it in his mental breakdown, giving us the visual of trying to hit a floppy dildo with a sledgehammer, which is great.
Yes. And also Frances McDormand's line, that's fantastic.
Right? Because you're not expecting her to react that way at all.
And I give that note to improv students all the time. I'm like, choose to love it because that's hilarious. And this is a great example of that.
Who's your weak link? Who did you not buy? This is not a regular segment. We're just on this topic.
Yeah, I mean, it's really tough, but I guess it would have to... It's tough, but I guess it would have to be George. Mm. Like, even though, yes, I enjoyed him, and I know what you're saying, Robin, about, like, that guy that he's playing. I have seen that guy in other things that he's supposed to be doing things in. And but I also kind of feel like George has two lanes. This and, like, political thriller, like, really serious.
Yeah.
I think...
Were you an ER person?
No, not really.
Yeah.
But I did see him on Facts of Life.
Drop.
But there's the middle road, too, where Ocean's 11, like where he gets that comedy just right. Mm-hmm. That's my favorite comedy from him.
Charmer.
Is Ocean's 11.
Yeah. And he slips into that a little bit when he's with Frances McDormand. Mm. And that was one thing I liked, was seeing like, oh, these two people actually get along.
Right.
Unlike literally everyone else who's banging each other in this movie.
Right. Yeah.
Yes.
And I don't remember. Does she knows that he's married, right?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes. He like walks in. He's like, I am not wearing this. I'm not wearing a wedding ring.
He talks. I mean, he pretends they're separated.
Mm. Right.
And I don't know. I think he doesn't want. I think he's more committed to his actual wife than anybody else.
I think so.
Like, I think he's even kind of leading Tilda on a little bit.
Yeah. Yeah, I think he's just a horny toad.
I mean, she might be. She's the children's books can be lucrative.
That's
right.
Just,
yeah. Yeah. So he knows what side his bread is buttered on with the old baby needs you.
Richard Jenkins is my MVP. What poor. I saw some note.
I'm not comfortable with this. That was so great. That's what I would do, right?
Right. As he inches out of the room.
I saw nothing. I know nothing. Carry on.
Get it out of here.
Forget that I exist.
In the screenplay, he is only ever referred to as the soulful manager of hard bodies because there is so much like pain and life behind his eyes that he just gets to release in drips and drabs. And I so desperately want to know the backstory why he's not an Orthodox priest anymore.
Right.
Yeah.
As much, I really admire that this movie is restrained and is 96 minutes long. And I love the ending being like, you've seen enough. Let's wrap this up. Yeah. Let's cut back.
Listen,
and...
I was upset when the ending first happened. I was like, did they run out of film? But at the end of the day, I really like this movie being 96 minutes long. And the way you described it earlier, where you were like, even the movie tells you this plot is too complicated.
Right.
I do appreciate. So yeah, it weirdly works how abrupt the ending of this movie
is. It's also sardonic. The whole movie, and I love that for it.
Yes.
And especially like when we wrap up, and I love that J.K. Simmons is the one that basically wraps it up for us, because he's like this, essentially, his character is a supervisor who just can't be fucking bothered. Mm-hmm. And I love it, and the way he just wraps everything up. And he's telling the one guy, he's like, I'll get back to you. Get back to me when it makes sense. Like, I don't like I don't need to hear about every little fucking pissing contest you guys are doing. Just get back to me when it makes sense.
And the... I know, you know, they said that this is just it's very much just like a light spoof of this genre, right? Mm. I don't think we're really commenting on
anything,
the real world here. Sure. And the score gives that away, right? That the fact that it uses the very real serious spy movie score over this nonsense. That said, I feel like there's a little relevant commentary in the way that character is like, I don't care. I'm just trying to, we got to burn the body, burn the body, right. Let him go to Argentina. I don't give a shit. Like right. That feels like some kind of comment on the way these things work.
Yeah. Especially like how many surgeries for how much, just whatever, just give it to her.
Pay yeah.
Her.
I thought it was fascinating and also slightly underwhelming. I know that doesn't make sense. Don't worry about it. That Frances McDormand's character's whole motivation is getting plastic surgery when Frances McDormand, the actress, famously will not do that.
Oh, really?
Yes. She won't even get Botox. And good I'm not saying that she should.
No, good for her.
Yes. Mm. I'm just saying that she's like, this is my face. And I remember seeing a clip
it's
where
won
she
won her three Oscars.
Yes. Where she talks about like the lines in my face make me think about raising my son. Oh. Right? Like when I see my smile lines, that's me smiling at my kid. Aww. Right? When I see my furrow lines, that's me being annoyed at my kid. Right, right? And I think that's really beautiful. Mm-hmm. If I had more money, I would totally get Botox, but good for you, Frances. But anyway, it's a little bit interesting / like they really give this woman very little complexity in a way that I think is incredibly intentional, but also frustrates me.
Well, also she kind of comes across as, and I don't know if this is on purpose, but she's not looking for love. She's just trying to smash.
Exactly. Well, I think she could love George Clooney.
She could, but I'm saying like that's not her. It's not even her motivation.
Right.
Like she wants to be a different version of herself so she can get as much dick as possible.
Her frustrations are relatable. Her desires are not. You know, right. Like the way she's exasperated with life and the world and right. Waiting on hold, like that's all very relatable. And then you realize what she wanted. It feels almost purposeful that the better a person in this movie is, the worse it works out for them and vice versa. You know,
Do we think Brad Pitt's was the best?
Richard Jenkins is the most pure soul here and right. he dies horribly and slowly.
Right, right.
Brad Pitt is an innocent and he dies quickly.
Brad Pitt starts a blackmail scheme and wants to sell state secrets to Russia. I don't think he's a good person.
He's going along for the ride.
But I think that was like an accident.
Like the Russia thing?
Yeah.
Okay. Well,
she led him to.
He was like a reward.
Mm.
And he fucked up when they got him on the phone doing some sort of weird voice or whatever.
You're right.
And talking all crazy, like, you know, I got your shit.
She's the worst person in the movie.
Yeah.
Even though John Malkovich kills Richard Jenkins. That she's the way she was like running over everyone to get these stupid surgeries. It's and she's the only one who gets what she wants.
Right. Yep.
I mean, John Malkovich does not quite fit this narrative because he's in a coma. But even he didn't die.
No, right. No.
No, I'm talking myself back up. I will say to Robin, your underwhelmedness, I didn't like this as much as I remembered liking it when I was, I don't know, 21. What year did I say? 2008? 22, 23. I liked it more at the time. I did feel like it's a little cold and it's a little thin in retrospect. Yeah, it suffered a little bit for me just because, like, at a certain point, you're just like, well, let's wait to see how this resolves. And okay, fine, it did. But, well, I like it.
It's very enjoyable. This is one of those movies for me that I think I would watch it again, just for like the certain scenes in itself. And I guess it's probably just because it's so memeable or whatever, and the gifs and all that bit. Why I thought I saw it before.
Oh, that makes sense. I've absolutely had that experience.
But I guess second to the car scene, the biggest laugh out loud moment was when Tilda is in the office with that kid. She's giving an exam to this child. And she's like, do as I say, and blah, blah, blah. She's like, do as I say, or I'm going to tell your mother to leave, and you and I are going to sort this out ourselves.
She's so good. Put her in every movie.
She is so good and should be in every movie.
Which, Tony, why? Because Tilda talked about she might be retiring.
What?
We need her.
Well, Daniel Day-Lewis is coming out of retirement, maybe it's like we just need one of the top 10 actors of all time.
They had to swap out after a while. It's a rotation.
Yes, because Denzel's also talking about retiring.
I would happily allow, like, not that I'm sick of seeing him, but I'm kind of sick of seeing him. Like, it's not.
You're sick of seeing Denzel Washington?
It's weird. Like, maybe it's more like, I feel like you have deserved and earned a break.
Oh, I see.
My man. Like, just chill. Like, I don't want to hear about, like, Denzel trying to do some shit on set and he has cardiac arrest. You know, because, you know.
How old is he?
I don't know, but the man needs a break.
He has started to look significantly older recently. I mean, who among us?
Right, yeah. Remember the whole Uncle Denzel thing that was happening?
I forgot about that.
Well, we'll see him tonight as we're recording this, the three of us. If I'm not assuming it's going to happen because we've done this podcast for 5 years.
Yeah.
5 years, and at no point in there have the three of us gone to a movie together.
We actually watched an actual movie in the same room.
We'll hit two out of three sometimes. Allegedly, we're seeing Gladiator 2 tonight, which looks like he had an easy time. It looked like he had to wear a robe and sit and explain what a gladiator was.
Yeah, totally.
But maybe there's going to be more to it than that. The trailer.
Red Band trailer.
Midola found like this CD just lying in a locker.
I'm not comfortable with this.
You should put up a note in the ladies' locker room.
Put up a note? Hello? Did anybody lose their secret CIA shit? I don't think so.
This is some senior guy who screwed the pooch.
Osborne Cox?
Yes.
I thought you might be worried about the security of your shit. I've been
working on a car. What you're engaged in is blackmail.
I'm a mere good Samaritan.
Give me the CD.
Soon as you give us the money, dickwad.
Who's father?
It's messy. He is screwing Mrs. Cox.
Pull around the corner, we'll do it in the back.
That's so cool.
Back of the car, not the rear entry situation.
We don't really know what anyone is after. Report back to me when, I don't know, when it makes sense.
I am very impressed with this trailer. Because
really leaning into Brad Pitt.
It is, but I just thought that it actually got the tone of... I was expecting last week's trailer, The Practical Magic, that's like, this is a wacky comedy. And this actually kind of told you what it was going to feel like.
Yeah.
I really like how it goes from the minds behind or whatever, No Country for Old Men and The Big Lebowski, because... That really does sum up the range.
Yeah, right, yeah. We're like complete polar opposites.
Yes. But I think the trailer indicates to you this is going to be more along the lines of The Big Lebowski, but maybe a little bit more grounded.
Yeah.
Because what isn't?
Yeah. Right. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
There's no magic carpet rides, per se, in this one.
You are right, though, Camila. There's a lot of Brad Pitt compared to the movie.
Yeah.
Probably he was the biggest star at the time.
I'm sure. I mean... Would he be
when did Clooney win the Oscar?
Before this.
Yeah, I think Clooney is a hot take. I think those two get lumped together. I think Clooney is a much bigger star than Brad Pitt.
I think he's the most marketable.
Yes.
Let's put it that way.
Yeah.
Brad Pitt was the most marketable at the time. And I guess we'll get there, but have either of you watched Wolves?
No.
No. What is that?
Brad Pitt, George Clooney movie on Apple. I haven't watched it yet.
What?
Either. Yeah.
Yeah.
I know. Ken,
a movie with those two came out. Nobody noticed because it's on Apple.
Right.
The thing that's Ted Lasso and allegedly other content. That's.
It's on the Ted Lasso channel.
Yeah. I like the show with Jason Segel and Harrison Ford.
I still have to finish
and
that.
And the episodes I've seen of Loot have all been enjoyable.
Yeah, those were good.
Your letterbox list is Don't Tell Me What to Do. You're Not My Mom. It's just a list of movies where the title is a command.
Ah.
Leave It to Beaver. Throw Mama from the Train, Call Me by Your Name, Stand by Me, Bring It On, Drag Me to Hell.
All right.
I like
Burn
that.
After Reading.
Yeah, I'm going to put that for future.
Mm-hmm. The title is a command. Wreck-It Ralph. That's stretching it. That's his name.
Yeah.
No one is saying to him, hey, Ralph, go wreck it. We need to talk about Kevin. That is, even that's a stretch.
We need to talk about Kevin.
It would be like, talk to me about Kevin.
Talk to me about Kevin now, please. Yeah, this is a good idea. I'm not sure about the execution. Yeah, I like it. I am going to have to look at my numbers here. Like, do I like this more than Cheech and Chong's Nice Dreams? Yes. Do I like it more than Rocky IV? No. So there's the range. I don't know. 72 seems right. Camila?
78.
Robin?
58.
Okay, yeah, you were a little lower.
Yeah. I mean, this is the thing. A lesser Coen Brothers movie is still a Coen Brothers movie, right? And I do think that I am more inclined to like the Raising Arizona end of the spectrum where, like, I mean, a lot of Coen Brothers movies boil down to two idiots have a scheme, right?
Yeah.
This is like six idiots have various schemes,
right? Yeah,
and I like those are my favorites. So even with that, this one was whelming.
Whelming. I am whelmed.
Yes,
sufficiently whelmed.
Did anybody but me see Driveway Dolls? The first
I did.
Ethan I haven't one? Seen.
I yeah. love that movie,
and I was whelmed.
Yeah, yeah. You are more likely to be whelmed.
Yeah.
69 1/3 feels for a movie with a dildo smashing scene.
Yep. Nice.
Nice.
I knew it. I was there. I was waiting for it. Yeah.
To the bingo card. I'm disqualified. I left it in my other bag. Sorry. I'm sorry.
I put down grocery shopping because there is a grocery list to reveal someone as married at some point. But that's a stretch.
No.
Frances McDormand's first conquest, who has the awkward turtle sex.
Yeah. Yes. Mm-hmm. Thank you for placing that.
That could have been from his mom, though, too.
Oh, good point. Good point. Men are pathetic. sorry.
Job search.
Well, so Malkovich gets fired.
Right.
And they talks about, I'll do some consulting. No, I'll write a memoir.
Nah.
Okay. Those were the only ones I thought we had a chance at.
Yep.
Damn. All right.
So I missed nothing.
Yep. Nope.
Well, good news.
Wait. Doesn't the guy with the weird turtle sex guy, doesn't he show up again at the end when Clooney and Frances are in the park?
Does that count as an old flame returning in your mind?
In my mind, yeah. I mean, old flame, I mean, I don't mean like the love of your life. I mean, I'll take it. They had sex. He reappeared and she tried to ignore him. She successfully ignored him.
Speaking of this movie being very divorced, I like when the guy's like, calm down. It happens to everybody.
Right. Exactly.
That's one of the moments I don't believe, but it's because it's like, I don't get him being shocked.
Yeah.
You know?
He's just a ridiculous person.
Yeah, he is kind of a ridiculous person. It's time for You Can't Handle the Truth. Peel back the curtain. We recorded like 5 days ago. They just smashed into each other. So I don't know how many things any of us have seen since then, Robin.
I've been on a roll.
All right.
Wow.
So first of all, I watched Juror Number 2. Sean, do you know what the deal with Juror Number 2 is?
I watched that
too. Yeah, do you know about this?
I barely know what it is. I know there's a movie of that name.
So this is Clint Eastwood's possibly final film because he's a very old man.
Right.
And it's Nicholas Holt is on the jury of a murder case and then is like, wait, did I do it?
Right.
Which is the stupidest premise I could think
of. Really? Because I loved it.
Well, this is what I'm going to say. I can't believe how good that movie is for such ridiculous concept.
Right. And when I started thinking about it more, like, you live in the town and you never heard anything on the news.
Good point.
About a woman being found dead.
Right.
Like, near the bar that you frequented. So, yeah. But.
Yeah, there's so many. Colin fell asleep during it, and then he asked me to, like, recap what happened, and he was like, well, why would that happen? And I'm like, it's a contrivance. And he's like, well, why would this happen? It's also a contrivance, you know? Like, but it's just so well done that while you're watching it, you'd never notice.
It's like he's having, maybe I'll see it.
You should watch it, but here's the thing.
What you're describing sounds like that thing where you're driving along and just a thought goes into your mind, did you run over anybody today? Are you dragging someone to their death behind your car? Like that, just that, like, what do you mean he wonders if he murdered?
Well, he thought he hit a deer. The way it's revealed, it's really
my
well
metaphor
done.
Was apt.
I thought, I was like, listen, if that happened to me, I would have also thought I hit an animal.
Yeah.
And just gone on with my life.
No.
Wouldn't you stop?
He does stop.
But he sees nothing.
Gotta watch this movie.
You gotta watch it.
So anyway, you can watch it.
Yeah.
Our listeners can't unless you live in a big city. They released this into 50 theaters. 50.
Wow.
50. Really? And it used to not even be in the For Your Consideration app. That was a delayed edition.
They are burying
this for reasons that I don't know.
That's weird.
That's so odd.
Because I do think this is a genuinely enjoyable movie.
It is.
Normies, too.
Yeah, it's very, and I don't even know if I'm saying this properly because I don't know how many other Clint Eastwood movies I've watched, but it's very, feels like it was directed by Clint Eastwood. In a sense, it kind of feels slow.
It is a little slow.
But not so slow as to where I lost interest,
yeah,
or you know, fell asleep or anything.
The other way it feels like a Clint Eastwood movie is that he famously, he's the opposite of Stanley Kubrick. He does one take. One take, and that's it.
Hence the fake baby.
And hence the fake baby. And there are several places where Nicholas Hoult says things that no American has ever said. He was like, he was sat on the other side of the room. Yeah. And I'm like, come on, buddy.
I caught that. I was like, that's a weird way to phrase it.
That's how they phrase it in British English, yeah, which we don't speak here.
Right.
I'm trying to remember the last one of his I liked. Because I hated Richard Jewell. I didn't see Cry Macho. I didn't really see The Mule.
I'm just mad at Richard Jewell for J-Lo reasons. Because Kathy Bates took her nomination for Hustlers.
Oh, yeah. Gotcha.
Jersey Boys was fine.
I never saw that one.
Anyway.
Regardless, if you live in a big city or if you have screener access, watch Juror No. 2.
It'll just pop up
eventually it'll be on Amazon Fandango. Prime or what have you. Okay. Between the Temples.
Yeah, Schwartzman and
Carol Kane. Mm-hmm. Really enjoyable. Oh. Really sweet.
Awards potential or just nice movie?
I think maybe Indie Spirits level, definitely, probably, or I want to say probably not Oscars level. I mean, I'd love Carol Kane to get a second Oscar nomination, but I don't think that, depends on how heavy the field is. I'm not sure. Mm-hmm. Conclave, have you seen that?
No, I know I need to. I didn't need to. I didn't realize it was going to be a big contender. And it's still out. I can still catch up to it.
I watched it in the theaters yesterday. Mm. When you do see it, you will immediately understand why it is a big contender. Like, it is, like, basically Ralph Fiennes is amazing. Mm-hmm. Like, I think he's at the top of my best actor ballot at present. Still have a ton to watch. Mm-hmm. It is slow. And because I am not Christian, or and especially not Catholic, there's a lot that I don't fully understand or appreciate, and yet I was riveted. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
And so I also want to say that I think the greatest tragedy is that this happened the last year that there's no casting Oscar, because every role has the perfect actor, because there's a lot of small, like, you know, there's 100 cardinals in the room, right?
Right.
And there's, you know, five or so main ones. But even the tiny parts, I'm like, oh, that person nailed that line reading. That person is perfect. So, yeah. And Isabella Rossellini also just, whew, I love her. Anyway.
I've got to make time for this. This feels like the perfect 1 p.m. screen showing.
I literally saw it at 1 p.m. Yeah. yesterday, and it was perfect. Mm-hmm. And then Thelma with June Squibb.
Yeah.
This is the one that I watched this week that I loved the most. Mm. And I watched a lot of good movies this week. Thelma is, like, there's the genre of little old lady movie, right? I think Thelma is the Citizen Kane of that genre. I will say there are some times that the direction is a little clunky and the score is bad. Like, the thing you were saying about Carter Burwell's score for Burn After Reading, that's what they were probably going for with this, but it's too over the top and cartoonish. But June Squibb is amazing. Richard Roundtree, the late great Richard Roundtree, is also really wonderful in it. And then Fred Hechinger, I'm not sure how to say his name. Do you know who this person is? He was on The White Lotus.
No.
He is a sweet little precious baby, and I want to cuddle his little face. Like, he's too young for me to be sexually attracted to him.
Right, right.
But like, I want to warm him up. He's so precious. He's in Gladiator 2, and it looks like he's a bad guy. And I hope that my 3-day crush on him is not destroyed in 3 hours, but we'll see.
He's a puddin'.
He's so little and precious. And I just, what I want to say about this movie is that in the little old lady genre, often what it ends up feeling like the movie is about is the middle-aged person making that movie's anxiety about getting old. Mm. This movie is not that.
That's great.
The old characters feel like real people who have real present wants and needs, right? Their whole lives aren't behind them. And it just made me so happy. And Colin's grandfather is 94. His grandmother's also in her 90s. Wow. And I really want to watch it with him. Yeah. I hope we get to watch it again over Thanksgiving, because I think he'll really appreciate it, especially.
Aww.
Yeah. Beautiful movie. Highly recommend it. It's on Hulu.
Oh, it's on Hulu.
Yes. Okay. Oh, and one more. Sorry. I watched Babes, also Hulu. Yeah. Because Alana Glazer announced that they are non-binary. I don't know if people saw that.
I did not know that.
Yes. And apparently Broad City.
The funnier one from Broad City.
Gotcha. Wow.
Apologies. Wow. Sorry. Said that. But notice what a gut reaction that is.
Okay.
All due respect to Abby Jacobson, yeah. who's good and is a good voice actress now, too. But Alana's funnier.
Mitchell Source's Machines, I still love you.
That's true.
Yeah, so they recently announced, and part of what made them understand that was that they were pregnant. Mm. So anyway, I've never been pregnant. I still found a lot to relate to in this movie. Then I went on Letterboxd and read a bunch of cis men's 2-star reviews where they were like, just couldn't connect to this. And I'm like, would you have 10 seconds, 10 seconds of self-reflection, please?
On the internet? No, that generally doesn't happen.
So anyway, watch it if you have a uterus or have ever had a uterus.
Or just can empathize.
Okay, sure.
Not Colin all, liked it. Anyway.
Colin liked it.
Camila?
Aside from juror number two, The Apprentice.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. I'm not willing. I mean, I'm
curious about it, but also yeah. It makes me feel queasy.
Yeah,
it's interesting. It's difficult. No, because, what's his name? Sebastian Stan does not do a Donald Trump impression,
right.
Quote unquote.
That sounds like a good thing.
Yeah, because we're... with Trump,
we know
we're with Trump way before he's mm-hmm. Donald Trump,
right?
So, and it's, I found it interesting to see, because it's about Trump and Ray Cohn, who was essentially his mentor, and so Jeremy's
sorry, which is just like that's just a bad person to pick as your mentor.
Well, yeah, I mean, and you'll see. Mm-hmm. Oops, stay with me. And Jeremy Strong is the one that's doing the Donald Trump impression per se.
Because
we're seeing where Trump has gotten. So basically the movie leaves you with the question, if not for Ray Cohn, would Trump have chosen this path?
Mm.
So it's like a Frankenstein situation, you know?
Yes.
And I found it difficult because at some points you're like, How do you humanize Donald Trump? Sebastian Stan and I forget the guy's name who wrote this and the director, they all did a very great job of doing that. But then it's like, okay, yeah, you get my 5 seconds of sympathy, but now we're moving. Like, now mm-hmm. I see like who you've chosen to become. Like we move on. So mm-hmm. it's easier to watch it because Sebastian's not doing that impression.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
and also because it's well before he's Donald
right,
Trump.
Right.
Right.
It's
still makes me clench up.
So sometimes I'll watch old wrestling that's like at Trump Plaza and they go to, oh, we're going to talk to this guy who owns the place. And it's like, how? Like even knowing, I know how.
Right.
But like just to look back, it's like, anyway, let's not.
Right. Yeah.
Is it, as a movie, does it work? Like,
it does.
Okay.
Because they put you right in, I guess, the 80s mm-hmm. is like when this is all going down. And even just like the film style and like the film type that's mm-hmm. being used, like it all just feels very 80s and you're right there in it. And you're just, you get in entrenched into this, the building of Frankenstein. And, you know, you're watching this shit happen. What happens to him, and then he's like spewing his bullshit on everybody else. So, you know, again, like I still think he's a piece of shit, and I go on record saying that. Mm-hmm. But as
hot
a
take,
right? Exactly.
Yeah, I feel like it is the unanimous opinion of right. the number one movie in America yeah. that in Donald case, Trump is a piece of shit.
In case there was any question, mm-hmm. I want to make sure it's no. But as a character. And as a film, yes, mm-hmm. it works. And you, and I know it's, for some, it might be very too soon
yeah.
to like try to separate the two.
Absolutely. There's plenty. Listen, my lists for best animated feature and best international feature, I don't feel I fleshed those out enough. It's between The Apprentice and The Wild Robot. I'm just going to watch The Wild Robot. Or one of the sad movies. Man, I don't know if you've done any of the international contenders yet.
No, not yet. I really need to get into it.
There's not a happy one. They're all like, everything is terrible. Here's an important movie about it. The only, I've literally watched two movies other than Burn After Reading since we last recorded. The new one is, what the hell's the name of it? Generic title, Jesse Eisenberg, Kieran Culkin in, you know, the Jesse Eisenberg
movie. Sure.
A Real Pain.
What a terrible title.
It's
like one brother and his fuck up brother, I think.
Cousins, yes.
Okay,
cousin and his fuck up cousin. Go to Poland to honor the memory of their recently departed grandmother who was in concentration camp, and they're trying to bond and reconnect. Written by, directed by, starring Jesse Eisenberg, and Kieran Culkin is the fuck-up brother. Kieran Culkin is great. No notes. Jesse Eisenberg. Here's the thing. I don't really enjoy him.
I can't stand him.
I think he's fine. He's fine.
Sometimes that's entirely appropriate. It's entirely appropriate in The Social Network.
Yes, it works very well in The Social Network.
Even Adventureland, entirely appropriate. But when in this case, you have one guy who's kind of uptight and a little irritating and a little square, and another guy who's an asshole. And it's like, now take a sad road trip with an annoying guy and an asshole. So I'm like, well, this isn't a very good time. And I understand that fundamentally it's about someone who survived the Holocaust and it's about people who are having a tough time. It's not that it has to be happy. It's that with these guys in there, it's just like, it just feels a lot more like work than I think. I think Jesse Eisenberg is showing great promise as a script writer. I wish he would have cast someone else. Director, whatever. It's just kind of there. Yeah. This is another big contender that I think more is in the 7 out of 10 range. The only other thing I watched, which is barely worth mentioning, but I do, just to bring up this little fun fact that'll ruin Robin's day.
Oh, no.
I was updating our list, our mm-hmm. master list.
Oh, boy.
For the new number one movie in America is Red One. And so I put Red One on and put it on the holiday list, which because it's a Christmas movie, that was the number one movie in America. That's short. We have to have all of them on there, so it has to go. And then that made me realize there's another movie I have to add to the holiday list. Terrifier 3.
Oh, snap.
Get me out of this room. I say again.
On our random draw of about a dozen movies,
it
could fully land on Terrifier 3.
I thought you were going to say that Red 1 being a likely, like, you know, as likely as anything draw. No, that's much worse.
Yeah.
I second that because I don't want to see that.
No.
I bring it up to say I watched the one before Terrifier, before even Terrifier, Art the Clown first shows up in an anthology by that director. What's his name? Leone? Damien Leone? Did an anthology film with called All Hallows Eve that has a couple of his shorts and some new stuff. So this was my first exposure to the character and to this guy's work. It's fine. It's dramatically more gory and, you know, the torture of captive people than I like and I think most people like. The character, like, I see why the clown is kind of being lumped into the Freddy Jason get, like, it, like he works as a character. You know, it's a little suspenseful. It's a little low budget fun. It's not great. I mean, again, this is not the one that people are like, oh my God, I love, you know, it's the actual Terrifier movies that some horror fans are really into. This did not convince me of why this is great, but I don't know. At this point, like, I'm such a horror person and these are have become such a thing that I think I'm gonna have to watch these at some point maybe that will be our holiday special.
I will cry real tears.
You have a veto.
You do have
I
a
do
veto.
Have a veto.
Yeah.
Nice. Preemptive veto.
So yeah, you gotta know that you should not use your veto today.
Right, yeah, no matter
what. Unless we are in incredibly dire circumstances.
That seems
I know,
like
I'm tempting fate.
Really tempting fate with the draw we are about to do. Programming note, if you're wondering when that holiday draw happens, we are one away. We're going to draw one more from the big list and then wind up 2024 with our one and only holiday episode. And I should say, we just do the one. If we don't like the draw, we've been known to lump a second one in there. Mm-hmm. We can't really burn another number one movie in America, but, you know, so. Holidays soon. First, We're one number one movie from our list growing to 1,700 films, by the way.
Wow. Mm-hmm.
Well, no one will argue with that. Before we get to that, just we're going to spend a little more time with our old friend James Bond in Goldfinger.
Okay.
I guess.
It's one of the key ones.
Yeah.
Yeah.
The only issue is that I feel like we've... How many have we done? Have we just done...
Just done the one?
GoldenEye? We've
done GoldenEye and Moonraker.
Oh. Yeah.
This is Sean Connery.
Yeah. Yeah. It's good. I've seen it.
It's on Amazon Prime.
I haven't seen many of them. That seems fine. Okay. You have that veto locked and loaded.
Yeah, we haven't done Connery Bond.
No. Yeah.
Yeah. That's true.
What was it? Timothy? What's his butt?
We had Roger Moore and Pierce Brosnan.
Gotcha.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Haven't hit Daniel Craig. What's happening with Bond? Is there one? There's got to be one in development,
I
right?
think they're taking a break.
Have they decided on the new one?
They, at some point, they were like, it's going to be, what's his face? The Black Hole of Charisma.
The who?
Aaron Taylor Johnson.
Oh.
Yeah.
I don't know.
But.
I don't think he's, I don't know.
Hate that guy.
Really?
Yeah.
34 minutes ago, Daniel Craig teases who was replacing him as James Bond.
Tony.
However, at the Governor's Award in Hollywood last night, Daniel suggested the new Bond was in the audience. And apparently, Barry Keoghan, Nicholas Hoult, and Paul Mescal were there. It's not Nicholas Hoult. Paul Mescal, I guess.
I'm tired of white men.
Let's handle this next time. Goldfinger. It's Goldfinger. The song. It's a good one. Before we get to that, Burn After Reading, September 12th, 2008. What was the number one song in America?
Rihanna.
No.
Fergie.
I thought we had hit this before. We probably hit songs on the same album.
Is it? It's not Alicia Keys.
Mm-mm.
Okay.
Katie, I don't know my place, Perry.
No, but thank you.
Justin Timberlake.
Who was the first person someone guessed?
Rihanna? Chris Brown?
No.
Okay, thank God.
I believe Rihanna has been an answer on this show as the featuring
Eminem
for this artist. No, we haven't hit Eminem. We haven't hit that Eminem. Blank featuring Rihanna, I think, won one.
T.I. Oh,
yes.
Live Your Life?
No, that's the other one. This is just T.I.
Oh, it's just T.I.
Whatever you like.
Whatever you like.
Okay, oh, literally, T.I. is a piece of shit.
I know, but what a gem.
Maybe in one of my top five favorite songs of all time. I love that song.
Actually, I think you and I are thinking about different songs. I'm thinking about Nicole Scherzinger or whatever you want.
Or whatever. Oh, okay. I don't know that.
That's a good one.
I agree. He's a piece of shit, but
also
man,
back then,
man, do we use that sentence a lot these days?
Yeah.
What?
Back then there was like an ad because it was an election year that went, you can vote however you like.
Yeah.